Brilliance Audio presents Letters from the Dead by Steve Robinson, performed by Simon Vance.
Tickets, please.
Jefferson Tate stirred reluctantly from the heavy slumber he'd been lulled into by the rhythmic motion of the train. His eyelids peeled open momentarily, and then he closed them again, hoping the conductor had already passed by. A few seconds later, he felt a tap on his shoulder.
Your ticket, please.
Tate opened his eyes again, more fully this time. He'd been using his suit jacket as a pillow. He yawned as he unrolled it and fished inside the pockets for his ticket. As he did so, he glanced out of the window and noted that the sunlit countryside that had been there when he'd last looked was now replaced by industry and housing. It had also started to rain.
April showers, he said to the conductor handing him his ticket. Where are we?
Northumberland. We've just left Berwick-upon-Tweed.
Tate sat up.
Thanks,
he said, taking back his ticket. He checked his watch. It was almost 1:30 in the afternoon. Having left London at 10 that morning, he quickly calculated that his remaining journey time was still around 2.5 hours, assuming a smooth changeover at Edinburgh for his onward journey to Perth, where he'd been told a car and chauffeur would be waiting for him. It might have been quicker to fly, but whenever he had an alternative, he preferred to take it, on account of the stress he knew his phobia of flying would cause him. Tate put his ticket away again. As he did so, he felt the letters that had necessitated his trip to Scotland. He took them out, pinched the sleep from his eyes, and glanced over them again. One had been written by his client, Damien Sinclair, who had contacted him after seeing one of the advertisements Tate had placed, as soon as he'd felt settled enough in his new environment to start rebuilding his career. Sinclair's letter described a tantalizing genealogical brick wall that was all but impossible for a man in Tate's profession to ignore. Although brief, it spoke of British India, an illegitimate child, and an unknown four-times-great-grandfather who, despite many years of searching, no one had been able to identify. The other was a copy of an apparently related letter, penned by another hand, dated almost 150 years earlier. Business had been very slow of late. Tate had only received a handful of calls in recent months, and he'd taken a few assignments as a result, but none had proved to be very interesting to a genealogist with his breadth of experience. The letters from Damien Sinclair, therefore, represented a welcome change, although mention of a valuable gemstone in the older of the two letters was still of some concern. The last thing Tate wanted to get involved in since leaving his old life in Washington, D.C. behind him was a trivial treasure hunt. But of all the assignments he'd taken on lately, this was the only one that excited him. He only hoped his skills as a genealogist hadn't become too rusty. He closed his eyes again and recalled his initial meeting with Sinclair, the man he was now travelling to see at his family home near Cymru in Scotland's southern highlands. Sinclair was a stockbroker, and because he largely conducted his business affairs in London, he'd asked Tate to meet him at the East India Club on St. James's Square, where he was a member. Tate pictured the lounge bar he'd been taken to by a smartly dressed member of staff wearing black and gold livery. The room was plushly decorated, with the high ceilings that were typical of the Regency style. It had cream walls adorned with gold stucco work and gilt-framed portraits, with several chandeliers hanging over a blue and yellow carpet, onto which was set an array of red leather Chesterfield chairs and settees. There had been several other people in the lounge when Tate entered, largely sitting in pairs, with one or two noses buried in the morning newspapers. Tate was led towards the leftmost of several tall windows that faced the small parkland at the centre of St. James's Square, where the man he had come to meet was seated in the corner of the room. He rose as Tate arrived, his posture erect, head high, accentuating his aquiline features. Like Tate, Damien Sinclair was over 6 feet tall, although unlike Tate, Sinclair was very slim, with pronounced cheekbones that gave the skin beneath them a hollow appearance.